What is up, everybody, and welcome to the Tailgate. This is Tailgate Talks, and you're listening to episode number 249. It is a Wednesday night, February the 5th, and we are recording after the Red Raiders have now won 7 straight basketball games since the last time we've spoke to you guys. They were on a 3-game win streak. They've now won 4 more. Make it 7 after 2 impressive wins, one at Houston, one at Baylor. So lots of basketball to discuss today. We've got a look at the 2025 Texas Tech football schedule that's been released. And in final shots, the NBA deadline or trade deadline is nearing. And, well, one of the biggest trades, maybe the biggest trade ever in NBA history, with Luka Doncic being traded to the Los Angeles Lakers, happened on Saturday night. So we have a lot of stuff to talk about. Going to be a fun episode. So let's go.
Get your guns up, Red Raider Nation. Let's go!
Well, Dustin, the times for Texas Tech basketball have been fun lately. It's been a fun 3 weeks for Red Raider basketball, as they are currently on a 7-game win streak that includes 5-0 on the road, 9-2 in Big 12 conference play, the best start in Big 12 conference play in a long, long time. So the vibes are good. The aura is good, as the people are saying on Twitter. How are we feeling right now after another win over the Baylor Bears last night at the USA? The USA was rocking. And, of course, we'll get into that game a little bit later, but just our vibes right now as the things are looking bright.
Things are rolling, man. And I think the biggest positive out of, you know, not just the last 2 weeks, but all of this first half of conference play, is that we're winning in a lot of different ways with a lot of different people, more like a lot of different people out, whether it's rolled ankles or bum ejections, or concussions. Like, we haven't had our full team for almost any game for the full game. And, you know, we've won in some shootouts. We've won, you know, in the 60s, 60 to 50, some stuff like that. And, you know, that's what I like about this coaching staff and this team, is they can win in multiple ways on multiple levels. On the defensive end, they've really ramped it up. I mean, we have now held multiple teams to under 20 points than their season average. That's incredible. Our perimeter defense has really stepped up, and things are rolling, and Kerwin Walton's kind of back. So that's a plus.
And 3 of the 4 games since we've last spoke to you guys, we've held teams to under 60 points. The only team you didn't was Houston on the road. You're really starting to see this basketball team play like the team that we thought coming into the season.
Right.
A lot of us were really high on this team. We all thought the roster was really built well, versatile, depth, just kind of everything that you want in a basketball lineup. And sure, there was a little bit of a bumpy start, but they're starting to figure each other out. Elijah Hawkins is playing really good for you. Chance McMillan's becoming just
stud,
an absolute beast for you. Darian Williams is doing his thing. JT Toppin, Kerwin coming back to life. It's just like everything's kind of working right now, and you still probably haven't played your best basketball just yet. Like you said, you've had guys out. Like, even in this past game, like, Toppin rolled his ankle, and so he wasn't really the same after that. Overton was still kind of recovering from his concussion. He didn't feel like he was near 100% in this one. So you're still not like at full health yet, and you still just haven't had a game where just like everybody's clicking, where Chance and Toppin and D5 and like you got the whole thing going, and you just kind of think, man, if everybody gets going at the right time and everybody's healthy, like, this team's going to be really hard to beat. And you can win in multiple ways. Like you said, you can win kind of a low scoring game, or you can kind of go toe to toe if it's one of those offensive firepower games. And you just see this team's ability to kind of adapt with whatever game in whatever situation. The ability to win on the road is super impressive. So there's just a lot of things going for the Red Raiders. One of the things I kind of mentioned to some friends before the game yesterday is you brought him up, Kerwin Walton kind of coming to life for you now. He wasn't great versus Baylor, but he was awesome in the Houston game. McCaslin's faith in him paying dividends is kind of one of the things I haven't really seen a whole lot of people talk about. But you and I were clamoring, like, why is he even starting? But he kept starting him. Hoping that it would pay off, and it's kind of paid off here lately with some big games, and he had some huge shots in that Houston game. So everybody's
props to
taking
him too for staying engaged and in it, because that's easy for any player at any level to disengage and drop out and kind of be done with it.
Yeah, mighty impressive for Kerwin. And, you know, a lot of people are just taking notice of the coaching job that McCaslin's doing. And I think just like his belief in the players and the things that he does, you're really starting to see shine during this 7-game win streak. And so a lot of good things for the Red Raiders. We're not going to break down every single game, because the two most important games were the last two games, Houston and Baylor. So we're going to spend more time breaking those down. You know, we beat Oklahoma State since the last time we spoke to you guys, beat them 64-54. Nothing really to take away from that victory other than it was a little closer than I think you would have liked it to be. But you got the dub, and that's kind of what mattered is you got that dub. And then Darian Williams gets hurt at the end of that game. So you go to TCU. They come to town with no Darian Williams, take care of business there with a 71-57 win, kind of like much like the Oklahoma State game. Was a little too close than you wanted, but you were able to pull away at the end, get the 71-57 win with no Darian Williams on the court for you there. So took care of business against two teams that you needed to beat and got the job done there. And you headed with a 5-game win streak to Houston, which we all knew was the big matchup, the big one we had circled. Played them twice last year. They beat us both times pretty badly. So you were definitely looking forward to this one. Darian Williams was back. You found out right before, like an hour before tip, that Kevin Overton was a no-go. He suffered a concussion at the end of the TCU game. So he was a no-go for you. So you already knew you were coming in shorthanded. And do we want to talk about the ejection first since that happened?
Yep. Let's nail it and get it done, because that's the biggest thing.
Yeah.
Right out the gate of this game too.
Yeah, we'll start talking the game about the game the way the game started, which was 3 minutes and 50 seconds into the game. JT Toppin making a pass when he was double teamed, throwing it to the other side of the court. In the throwing motion, his leg went up and kicked the Houston player right in the nuts. No really easy way to just say that, just right in the nuts. And play resumed. Elijah Hawkins ended up hitting a three on that play, and then a timeout was called and everything kind of seemed normal at that time. Come back from commercial break, refs are reviewing this play. Toppin looks ready to go back in, and then it is announced that JT Toppin has been ejected from the game, much to everybody's shock, as it looked like just a regular basketball play, no intent or anything behind it. A baffling decision by Big 12 refs to kick him out in a huge conference game 3 minutes into the game. Now, at this time, McCaslin was just finding out that Toppin was ejected. Toppin was shocked when he was told that he was ejected. McCaslin sees the replay, loses his mind, as he should have, and went off on the refs and also got ejected. So, as we mentioned, you're coming to this game without Overton already, and JT Toppin, your best player, your leading scorer, your leading rebounder in a huge game on the road at Houston, gets kicked out 3 minutes and 50 seconds into the game, and Grant McCaslin gets ejected with him. Horrible officiating, one of probably the worst call I think I've ever seen, and we've seen a lot of doozies from Big 12 refs over the years. But anyway, that's how the game starts. Dustin, your thoughts when bringing back up all those memories and that thought of as that happened and how it all played out.
Yeah, what a bullshit call. I get fine, go review it, but to not use your brain to decipher what happened and just automatic go flagrant two ejection, and there was no intent and no purposeful act there. And so, like, to kick him out in a big game. And I heard from people this officiating crew was very inexperienced. And so
yeah, there's one guy who I think it was his third Big 12 game.
Yeah, and you had a guy who's a year or so in, like, pretty inexperienced crew for a big game like this with two big time teams as well. Yeah, didn't use their brains to decipher what happened. And then, like, after that was crap too, because their communication about the result was horrible.
Yeah.
You know, he kind of mumbled to the TV and maybe the arena. I don't know. Maybe we just get that feed microphone.
It did sound loud. I could barely hear it because you and me were watching the game together and I was like, did they just say ejected? Like, we were like, wait, ejection? What?
And then, like, they didn't tell our team and our player about it, apparently. Because Topham tried to come back in. So, like, they did it like very segmented parts that were bad communication there. So that's why you get Toppin's like shocked reaction. And that's why you get Grant pumped up. And that's where I wanted to go next, is I like how Grant reacted to this and backing up his guy, telling the refs they sucked at their job because they misinterpreted this horribly. Cost us our best rebounder for sure in a game we're playing three really good bigs and a good rebounding team. And I'm also glad he did that because our previous two coaches wouldn't have done that. Yeah. I believe
Adams wouldn't have done
it. Adams would have still been here like this with his arms crossed.
Yeah.
And Beard would have just been petty for the rest of the game and like gotten one later if we were down by 20, you know, like he would have done something silly like that. He wouldn't have backed him at the time because, you know, he thinks he's better and more important than what's going on. And then, first thing I said to you while we were watching, hey, good thing about this ejection, we have a head coach right on the bench ready to go.
Yeah.
Jeff Linder can just stand up and boom, we're back, Wyoming head coach. Let's go. And he did a great job stepping in. So props to him for that. And the team responded really well. Also, you know, Chance and Elijah with some big games. Kerwin stepped back up. And so – and Emily Elihu with some big, big minutes. You know, we were kind of worried about him being out there against some pretty experienced, skillful bigs, and he did a great job for us.
Yeah, he hung in there and did his part and came up with the biggest stop of the game at the end when he forced Juwan Roberts to travel in the final seconds of overtime. Yeah, it's just an absolutely shocking call. Like, it's still gets me heated thinking about that, just because the game, the way the game had started, it was a good start to the game. There was clearly no intention in it. It's clearly just physics. It's the way the body works when you're jumping and making that kind of pass, like your leg's going to kick up. If anything, the Houston player shouldn't have been all up in his grill like that. There should have been what's the spatial foul call?
Verticality
or whatever, when you're way too close.
It's in a cylinder.
It was just a terrible call, and you've said it a couple times, but you know it's bad when Jeff Goodman's agreeing with Texas.
Biggest take is if Goodman's on our side publicly,
this ain't
it's not it's bad.
For and the you had side. Everybody on Twitter being like, horrible call. King McClure on the broadcast was going horrible over and over and over.
He wouldn't let everybody it go. Knew.
Yeah, he wouldn't let it go. It was a terrible call, removed him. And then, you know, I'm very glad McCaslin went off the way he did. He needed to. He needed his voice to be heard. And not that like super helped. I do think the refs did end up giving us some calls that were beneficial in this game, but they were still pretty terrible. There were several calls that you're just like scratching your head out, like, why aren't they calling this? Juwan Roberts traveled like 20 times this game. Right. They finally called one at the end when it mattered the most. There was some other things. JoJo Tugler just like running through guys on offensive rebound attempts and setting screens and just like some clear and obvious stuff that they weren't calling that were even more flagrant than anything JT Toppin did.
Yeah. While you're there, the audacity of the Houston fans in that arena and on Twitter to be like, these refs suck, is wild. And then to be like, all three of our big men were in foul trouble all game. Well, ours got kicked out 3 minutes in.
Ours got kicked out 3 minutes in, and two of our guys fouled out. So, and our coach got kicked. So, yeah, it's a very rare time where you've got both fan bases screaming out, yeah, ref, you suck. And that was the case multiple times in this game. But when it came down to it, they got the call right on the travel, thank God. But
in the end, yes.
Just terrible, and I think we're here Wednesday, and we haven't heard anything. I don't think they're going to publicly reprimand an officiating crew, but you know, Kirby immediately put out a statement right after the game, saying that he had talked to Brett Yormark already. I don't get why we're so. I guess I understand it a little bit because there's not a whole lot of officials, and you don't want to just do this to where you don't get any more officials in the future, but at the same time, there's got to be some accountability for such a brutal call in a game like this. This is a marquee Big 12 game on ESPN2, and you kick out one of the best players for a basketball play. Like, these guys got to have better judgment than this, and when they make a call like that, that affects a game, that affects a season, that can affect the Big 12 title race, there's got to be more accountability for these guys. Maybe they're not calling this week. I haven't checked. Might go look at all the Big 12 scores after this and see who officiated. And if any of their names are on there, I'll be pissed. If they're not, okay, maybe they got suspended for the week. And it's on the down low, but there's got to be some sort of punishment dealt out for what that call was and how bad it was. But at the same time, you're thinking, without that call, do the Red Raiders win this game? Did this spark the energy that you needed to get the job done? Who's to say? But McCaslin left on a firing up the guys, and then they came out and they played their asses off in this one. Chance leading the way with 23 points. Dude. Elijah Hawkins was huge for you. I tweeted it out, got a few likes, but he broke like four ankles in this game. Dude. And what he did in those moves was far dirtier than what JT
did. He had Allen Iverson type moves going on with his crossovers and ankle breaks and whatnot.
He sent Usman to the literally all the way from the 3-point line to the baseline.
Yeah.
Like, oh my gosh, he had some moves, hit some clutch shots. Like you said, Kerwin Walton came back to life in this game, had four threes for you. Darian Williams hit a clutch three there to send it to overtime and tie the game. I thought, you know, Fede did his thing, unfortunately fouled out. Emily Yalajo stepped up when he needed to, him to. Just a real gutsy performance from these guys in a game that they had the lead.
Yeah.
There in the first half, you're like, okay. Second half gets a bit shaky. Houston makes their run, goes up by six with under 4 minutes left, and you're kind of thinking, all right, the crowd's into it. This is where Houston takes over the game, and instead you stay and you keep it close. You keep it close. You hit a couple shots. You get a chance here, and then Darian hits the three to send it to overtime. What were you feeling as this game kind of hung there in the balance and the Red Raiders continued to make plays to stay in this one and ultimately get it to overtime?
Yeah, we just kept playing and rebounding. That Darian shot, he hadn't played a, you know.
Yeah.
Subpar game for him, his standards. He was 0-for-4 from three at that point, and luckily just kind of had an Elijah Hawkins moment and broke a dude. And you know, King McClure's over there, they don't need a three, or the other guy, they don't need a three. Well, when it's wide open and you're a pretty good shooter, you're gonna take that. And 0-for-4 didn't matter. He nailed the one in the end that meant the most. And so that was clutch, and then unluckily fouled out. So, yeah, we had to finish the game with Kerwin and Emily Yalajo on the floor. Oh, and that was rough 4 minutes, but we, you know, pulled it out, and it was a gutsy, gutsy effort. Chance and Hawkins wouldn't let us lose that one, basically.
Yeah, Chance was clutch for you. He really took over in overtime. Yeah. It was his kind of show, and he was the guy that you trusted with the ball in his hands to make the right decision to go be able to get a basket, get to the free throw line, and he was able to do that multiple times. Hawkins hit a huge three there in the overtime, and he got the stops that you needed to. You gave yourself an opportunity down the stretch. I would have much preferred to not be up by one with them in the ball, but the basketball gods were on our side this time. As Juwan Roberts traveled, they said, and Joey McGuire tweeted out, "Ball don't lie." A ball don't lie for all Texas Tech fans.
And then the great tweet from the locker room from Coach and Toppin.
Toughest team wins, baby. Yeah, that was awesome. Yeah, just your thoughts after that win, man. This goes onto the Mount Rushmore of Texas Tech regular season victories for me. I'm not going to throw it into tournament wins. I think those are different. But regular season-wise, like, I can only think of a other handful that really made me feel this type of way after that kind of win, especially when you think of everything that we mentioned. No Overton, Toppin getting ejected, McCaslin getting ejected, D5 Fetty getting fouled out, and you're having to rely on Emily Olahu and Curran Walton to get a stop on defense. And you get the job done against a team that won 33 straight home games, 18 straight Big 12 conference games. Like, this is an all-timer for me.
Yeah, it's got to be up there for anybody. And Big 12, one of the best teams, hadn't lost in like 30 straight games at their arena. And cards were stacked against you, and you pulled it out. And so, yeah, by far one of your best wins in your program, conference wins for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I tried to enjoy it until the Lucas stuff came out. And so it's the only thing that ruined this win for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that was a nice chill night after that until, that news broke. But yeah, it just really goes up there for me, just because what these guys did in that performance and getting this W, and just seeing like all of Twitter and the whole college basketball Twitter world react to that, and just living off of everybody's positive thoughts of us. I just could keep scrolling all night, and then the Luka news dropped. But it was a lot of fun, a lot of good highlights, a lot of good plays, big shots, big time players. And they just kind of cement their legacy. This team did with that victory. There's kind of like those defining moments in a season that you'll always remember a team for. And this kind of became that moment. And for this team that, it's had some fun moments so far this season, but I don't think much else in the regular season, unless we win the Big 12 championship, will top what that one felt like. Really cool. For these guys, some stats from that. Chance McMillan, as I said, 23 points, 5 rebounds, 1 assist, 2 steals. He was your leader. Elijah Hawkins, 17 points, 6 rebounds, 4 assists. Darian Williams, 13, 3 and 3, and 3 steals and 3 blocks. So he did a little bit of everything for you in that one. Kerwin Walton was 4 of 6 from 3 with 14 points for you. Really solid game from him. Love to see that. Christian Anderson continues to kind of just be solid when you need him to. And he was 10 points for you. 1 of 6 from 3, not great, but he was 5 of 7 from the field free throw line. So he was able to get you points there. So you'll take that. You'll take that win. And we took that win back with us too. Lubbock, Texas, where the Red Raiders faced off with Baylor last night. Fun game at the USA, packed house. The students really showed up. It was an awesome scene at the USA, and the Baylor Bears got Jeremy Roach back, so they were a little healthier than we kind of thought, but they also lost VJ Edcombe, Edgecombe, or however you pronounce it, so he was not available. But Baylor coming off an impressive comeback victory over Kansas, so you knew this was going to be a tough one, but you were able to get the job done. It was a close game. You kind of kept the arms length from them. They would come back. You'd get a little lead. They'd come back. Chance went the hell off. But then they'd come back a little bit, and then you were finally able to kind of shut it down, hold them off, and ultimately get the victory over Baylor, winning 73-59 to move to 7 straight victories, 9-2 in conference play. Dustin, your thoughts over the win over Scott Drew and his Baylor Bears last night?
I'm really, really glad we got this win. Going into this 3-game tough stretch, I was just saying like I wanted one of these wins. But
yeah,
after the Houston win, I don't want to drop a home game after that to a good team. But
it'd be easy to do so.
You just got ranked up to 13th.
Yeah.
And you knew this was going to be your best crowd of the year with an 8 o'clock game, in-state rival, coming off a big win.
Yeah.
So you had everybody there. It was packed, and it was a great, great environment. Like, amazing, amazing stuff, especially once you get on some runs or chance goes nuclear and that place erupts. But yeah, your first half was really good and you out rebounded them, and that's what they're really good at. And you're this undersized team. You have been all year. We knew that obviously, but your effort on the glass and offensive glass especially is like incredible, because we should not be this good of a rebounding team with our size.
Yeah, you tied them in the game, you know.
And they got some back in the second half, and that's how they kind of clawed back and stayed within you. But yeah, Norchad Omier, he was a problem because he's, you know, a really skillful big four type dude. I mean, he had 16 and 12 on you. He was killing you on the glass that second half. I was really impressed with that freshman they have, Robert Wright.
Right, yeah.
He was kind of killing you and getting to the glass anytime he wanted.
Knocked down a couple shots. Yeah.
Yeah, he was good. And, you know, Toppin didn't play this whole game. He only played 20 minutes, didn't play a lot that second half after he tweaked his ankle. But Fetty came in and gave you some really clutch minutes, especially down the stretch there with some huge blocks for you.
Yeah.
And some lobs that Elijah Hawkins made look a little better because he floated a little short. So Fetty had to cock back for it to get a couple back-to-back lobs there. And so, yeah, this is like a really good team effort on that because, yeah, Anderson didn't have a great game, but, you know, gave you some decent sub minutes. Chance and Darian did what they did. That Chance streak of three straight, because you had – they kind of clawed back into it and were within like five there when Chance started this stretch, and they hit another shot later to – by the time Chance was done, we were up 10 and squashed their little momentum stretch. And yeah, these were NBA, past NBA threes type stuff. And the last one, he was feeling it and was going for the heat check moment and knew he had it too, because he turned away and walked off. And that was an amazing scene. And then Scott Drew let us have a great swag surf moment. Yeah. So thank you for that. Some coaches already know better to not do it.
It's like signing their death warrant right there.
Keep playing. But Scott Drew's like, we can't keep letting this guy stay hot. We got to time out and take the flag surf. So, yeah, amazing team overall win. And, yeah, I like just propelling us to start this second half of this Big 12 stretch.
Yeah, it's probably one of the cooler individual moments that I just can remember watching. Like, like those three straight threes that he hit. And like you said, I didn't know that he had turned around on that one until like getting home and seeing the, I was like, oh shit, he hit the Steph Curry on that. You know, he turned around, and then you watch it, and they posted the video today of it, like a really good angle.
Yep.
And like, man, he's turned around with that ball still like midair, and he just was in that kind of zone where just boom, 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 three straight threes, NBA range. And then once they called that timeout, the like whole team was on the court just celebrating for like the whole entire timeout. It was just a pretty cool, USA was rocking after that. Just one of the moments that I'll remember for a long time. So thank you, Chance, for that. That was cool. Just want to know what that felt like for him, how awesome that had to feel to have the whole USA rocking because of just what you did. That was pretty cool, but yeah, just kind of echoing a lot of the things you said there. There's a big opportunity to kind of have a letdown, right? You're feeling yourself. You're coming off like what's maybe been the biggest win of the college basketball season. You're ranked as high as you have been in a while, and you could get to feeling yourself. You're at home. We've seen us kind of struggle at home. You know, you lost to UC.
That could also be a lot of pressure at home.
Yeah, there can be, especially with that kind of crowd. You want to perform for those guys, for everybody that's there, that everybody that wore red and packed the house. And so there can be a little bit. And I think they came out a little nervous. Baylor kind of jumped on you to start the game, but then you settled down, got things under control. And this is a team just with a bunch of guys. When you need to execute, they're able to do so. You've seen that in a lot of these games where it's been kind of close around the 6-7 minute mark. And then those final 5 minutes or so, they just lock it down, and then you just all of a sudden what was a 3-point game all of a sudden becomes a double digit game and you're walking away with a win. So just really impressive what this team can do, especially down the stretch. Like you pointed out, Fetty was great for you defensively down the stretch. I think he had all of his three blocks there in the second half.
They didn't score in the last 4.5 minutes of the of that game.
Yeah, they hit a three, I think, to cut it, keep it kind of close at five, and then after that, they didn't score again. And so, when your defense needs to step up, you're able to do it. When you need to make some big key buckets, you're able to do that. Darian Williams hit a huge three that was kind of the silencer when Baylor was still trying to keep things around. Darian hit that three, and then I think after that it was another lob, and boom, game was over just like that. So, really fun team to watch right now. They're one of the hottest teams in the country, coming off 7 straight victories. What do you think has changed the most for the Red Raiders since kind of the beginning of conference play, and that UCF loss where kind of set the alarm off, like, are we going to make the tournament? And all of a sudden now you're sitting here a few games later and you're like looking like a tournament lock and a team that can maybe win the Big 12.
I think the biggest thing is on our defensive end. And I already mentioned we hustle our ass off to rebound because we're undersized. Yeah. But our perimeter defense guarding the three-point line is incredible.
It's gotten so much better.
I mean, the last three games, teams are 5 of 18 or 5 of 14. Cincinnati and Oklahoma State only made 3. Arizona only made 3 of their three-pointers. You're holding teams to 20% and 30% from the three-point line, and they're not making that many to make a difference in the game, whereas you're making 10, 12, 14 threes. That's why you're winning these games, to be honest. That's a big difference. That and you're getting offensive rebounds out the ass and second chance opportunities. And so it used to be one of your weaknesses, in the pre-conference in the fall, and you've ramped it up and guys are more dialed in or focused or rotating better. I don't know what exactly it is, but they're doing a hell of a job out there.
Yeah. They're really gelling. It's that thing that takes time. Defense takes time to kind of know where your guys are going to be and to know where to be in a rotation and kind of figure those things out. It was obviously a struggle to start the season. Teams were getting wide open looks from three. And, man, you're making dudes work for it. Even the threes Baylor hit were, tough guy-in-their-face shot. You're not just giving wide-open threes up like you were kind of earlier this season. I think that's definitely the biggest improvement is you're running dudes off the three-point line. You're making them work. I would much rather have guys scoring 2 points around the bucket, having tough shots there than knocking down wide-open threes. And your defense has just gone up another level. I think since January, you're one of the top defenses in the country. I think I saw something today that you're the 5th best defense since January. So your defense has gone up another level. Your offense continues to be just really awesome. We've got a bunch of guys who can knock down shots, chances shooting the ball, incredible. Christian Anderson's been really good. Elijah Hawkins has had some really good shooting games for you. And then you add in, Overton, Darian Williams, Kerwin coming back to life, where you just got a bunch of lethal shooters. And then you got a combination of guys who can get to the basket, create their own shot. You have low post guy in Toppin who can get you buckets there. You're just such a versatile team on both sides of the ball. Yep. And this is the best rebounding team that Tech's had. So it's just like when you're looking at the weaknesses right now, there's just not a lot that really scream out to you. This team is gaining traction around the country. A lot of people out there are taking notice. A lot of teams are taking notice. Red Raiders are one of the kind of not a sleeper anymore. I think they were a sleeper team a couple weeks ago, but not a sleeper team anymore. And these guys have earned it. They've earned the respect that they've been getting. And you just hope those things continue. Any other thoughts you've had on this recent stretch?
No, I just hope we can keep it up. 9-2 in the first 11, you got 9 left. You're in the thick of the Big 12 title race, not just the Big 12. You're up there. And so every game matters now, a lot more than what you thought it would.
Yeah, everything's starting to heat up. Like, this Baylor game was super important. You know, if you drop that game, you know, you win, you create a little separation from some of the other teams behind you. I think you're now two games in front of Iowa State and Kansas and some of those teams that are that have dropped four. And you're sitting there with two, kind of creating a three-headed monster at the top of the conference, and with you, Houston, and Arizona. But, yeah, there's a lot of Big 12 conference play left. Like you said, there's still nine games. And you hope you're not just, like, hot now. You're hoping you can continue that run and be hot come March when these games really start to matter, that you can keep this going. But it's fun to see this team be able to click like this and know that it's possible. That just gives you a lot of faith when you're like, okay, we can heat up and go win seven straight games. We've seen,
like
you
said, we haven't even like put it all together. Like,
yeah,
we have guys that keep getting dinged up. That affects that defensive rotation stuff we were just talking about, and guys continually step up and fill the minutes, and we figure it out. And so it'd be amazing to see if we could put a game together on both ends and with everybody. Like, that'd be fun, because
blow a team out.
The fact that we're like top 10 in every ranking analytics out there is amazing when you consider BS ejections and tweaked ankles left and right, you know?
Yeah, we got to wrap those ankles up better.
Seriously,
like, I don't
tape them ankles.
Tape them ankles.
If you're over 6'7", you're taping ankles.
I don't know what it is about these ankles, man, but there's like one every other game, and it looks like it's season ending every time, and it all makes everybody's heart stop. So I'm just like, come on, guys. But yeah, it's really exciting. And, you know, the last team to go on a kind of run like this was that team that made it to the Final Four. Not trying to compare anything like that, but I think one of the pivotal things of can you be a Final Four team is you've got to win six straight games in that to win the national championship.
Right.
Can you prove that you can win six straight games during a season of playing tournament caliber teams? That's what that 18-19 team did. They won like 10 straight games to end conference play.
Yeah.
Showed that they could do it. This team's won seven straight, going on the road, winning tough games. They've shown that they can go on a run like that. So mighty impressive. It's been a lot of fun. So if you've been missing out, make sure you're at the USA next Wednesday when Arizona State comes to town. These crowds are going to just keep getting bigger and bigger as long as Texas Tech keeps winning. It's going to be awesome. So, get out there. But before that, it's a huge game on Saturday night, late Saturday night, 9:30 p.m. Rest up that day because Texas Tech heads out to Arizona for a rematch with the Arizona Wildcats, who are 10-1 in Big 12 conference play. Their lone loss is to you. So it's a sold out crowd. They posted that today. Sold out for Texas Tech coming to town. Something I thought I would never say is Arizona selling out for Texas Tech coming to town, but that's pretty cool. It's a big game. It's a big opportunity. What are your thoughts on this huge opportunity on Saturday with you and Arizona?
Yeah, this will see if I – 'cause you kind of handled Arizona, I think, pretty well when they came here and made Caleb Love look average. So he plays a little better at home. And trying to contain him like you did last time and make your three, somebody get hot, out-rebound him. Hopefully Toppin can stay in this whole game. You know, that's the last two games he hasn't been able to finish.
Yeah.
So, yeah, need this one. Like I said, Arizona's right there in the Big 12 race, title race with you. This would be huge if you can get a dub here.
Yeah, this would be – this would go into, okay, I think you're going to win if you're able to pull this off. Like, you should have a chance to win with, you know, Houston's not going to be a cakewalk when they have to come to town. We obviously know that, but it's put you in the driver's seat if you're able to do this and get this victory. So it's exciting. And I'm like just weirdly confident with how we play on the road.
This
is a bunch of dogs who just for some reason love a road environment, it seems like. And I just don't have all these doubts about them stepping on in a hostile environment. You've seen it. You saw it last Saturday and at the Fertitta Center, just pretty raucous crowd. And they lived up to what the expectations that you needed from them. So I'm excited. And yeah, like you said, last time we just really took Arizona out of their game. Like I did not I did not think Arizona looked like a good basketball team, and that's credit to our guys. Like, they just made them uncomfortable. They made it very difficult for them on offense, and it was just a really good performance. And so, yeah, I have all the expectations in the world that we're going to go in there and play a good game. Am I going to go say we're going to win? No, I don't want to be that confident, but I fully expect us to go in there, give Arizona a battle, and make it a good game. And we'll see if you come out on top, and then you face Arizona State the following Wednesday. So a couple big games for the Red Raiders to keep in. And if you lose the Arizona game, you're not out of the title race.
It doesn't change
that at all, but it just makes it even more possible by knocking off a team that's a top of the standings, and being their two losses on the season looks pretty good for you. So big opportunities for the Red Raider basketball team. It's been a lot of fun. So tune in, watch, support these guys. They're giving it their all every time they step out on the court. Really fun group, really starting to love these guys, and wishing that Chance had a JUCO year we could get one more year of him, because, man, he's been awesome for you so far this season. But any other basketball related things you got for us this week?
I don't think so.
Well, let's shift our focus over from there to football, where we've known our 2025 football opponents, but now we officially know the order and the dates that we'll play those teams. So let's talk a little Texas Tech football schedule. Dustin, your thoughts on the Texas Tech 25 football schedule, that non-con, three straight home games to start the non-con versus Arkansas, Pine Bluff, Kent State, Oregon State. Then Big 12 play starts. Two road games to start off at Utah. So the first time you're playing Utah's Big 12 conference foes at Utah. Then you go to Houston from there, bye week in between Utah and Houston. And then October, that's your first conference home game versus Kansas at Big 12 champion Arizona State. Home versus Oklahoma State, at Kansas State, back-to-back home games versus BYU and UCF, and then you get a bye, and you finish off at West Virginia.
Yeah, I love how this schedule looks. I mean, not to sip Kool-Aid or anything, but every game is winnable on this schedule. And I only see three hard games, and those are toss-ups to me. Like, that's what I have at Utah, at Kansas State, and BYU at home are my hard 50-50 games.
I'll throw Arizona State in there too, just because of their last season. But
I'm not jumping on them, just because I think without Scatabo, they're going to come back down to earth. And we handled them with Scatabo last year. So, I mean, we'll see when we get to them how that looks. But, like, your only cold weather game is at Kansas State.
Yeah, it's not bad.
West Virginia, maybe. But I'm not too worried about them, to be honest. I always look at the byes when we get this. First bye is great. You know, it breaks up your only back-to-back road games with at Utah, bye week, and then at Houston. So that's nice. And, like, you get a month in. You know, they just had training camp and all that, fall camp. So good little break there.
Yeah.
Start conference and then little break. So I like that. But then that stretch in the middle there is rough. You got seven straight games before you get a bye, before your last game. So that could get a little tough on the body and on the mind in there, playing for 2 months straight.
Yeah.
But hey, if it works out that you're expectations are planning on going to the playoffs, a late bye could help us out.
Could be nice. Yeah.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Let's look at our schedule further.
Yeah. You get a bye week before West Virginia and the Big 12 championship. Yeah.
Exactly. You're with me. Now you're seeing it.
Yeah.
What else? Yeah. The only other note I had was the at BYU game is also after their bye. We don't have one, so that makes it a little tougher.
Well, BYU's
here. BYU here.
Yeah.
They're coming off a bye, so that makes it tough. And then Oklahoma State on the 25th is coming off their sixth straight game, so that could be a tough stretch for them when you catch them. So I noticed that as well. So there's kind of my thoughts. You should get 9 wins easily out of this.
Yeah.
If not more.
Yeah, I definitely think like 9 wins needs to be the floor. Now I'm not, you know, I'm still hesitant to drink the Kool-Aid. We've been burned on it before. But with what you've done, with what you've picked up, if there's anything less than 9, I think I'll have some really major concerns.
Oh, yeah.
Because the way this schedule plays out, I think your home games are all super winnable. You know, BYU does make me a little nervous. But and then I think, you know, you've got some road opportunities to pull some wins out. So if you're the team that you expect to be, a team that expects to compete for a Big 12 championship this year, I think you've got to get 9 wins. If you don't get 9 wins here, I just don't know if you'll ever be able to reach that level, I guess. Things that stick out to me, I'm always excited to welcome a new team to the Jones. So, you know, having Oregon State come to town.
Yeah.
I know they're not a Power 4 team anymore, but I always like having a new team, Oregon State. So that'll be kind of cool just to have a different fan base, a different team we're not used to seeing in the Jones. And the BYU gets to come to town for the first time. So, excited for that. And then first time playing Utah, and we all know how much Utah fans suck on Twitter. So it'd be nice to shut them up early in conference play if you're able to get that win.
Yeah,
it's going to be a tough one though. We know that. So, but yeah, those are some of the exciting games. Obviously having no TCU, Baylor sucks. Kind of odd to not have one of those teams on your schedule. Definitely odd. To all the people on Twitter that were bitching about our schedule, I'm like, man, we've known our schedule for 2 years. Like, yes. We knew who we were going to play. They're all complaining
guess
about
what?
It. Like,
in 2 more years, we're going to play these same teams. Yes. Yeah.
It's like,
we also forgot to mention 5 away games, 4 home conference games on this schedule, yeah. Whereas last year, next year is the opposite.
Right. So the Matrix schedule was released before last season. So we know all of our opponents up until the 2027. I think it's the 27 season.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's just, it's already set.
Guess what happens in 28?
What is that?
TV stuff is up for conferences again.
Conference realignment round 4 this time, or what? I don't even know what round it's considered at this point.
Also, shout out to the tech media department to make a very good readable graphic.
Yeah.
I saw some other schools with very shitty ones that I couldn't read or figure out, or even other Texas Tech media people that made crappy ones that I didn't know what was going on, to be honest. Like, very readable.
Very readable.
Awesome. Home away dates. Yeah. Great job.
I love it. Just a simple schedule, you know, with the, I just want to know the order of the games. I don't have to determine if it goes down this way and then down this way or back and forth. Texas Tech football 2025 schedule is out. Season tickets are on sale right now. So if you're not in on it already, get those tickets. Get ready for what looks to be an exciting year for the Texas Tech football team. That'll do it for our Texas Tech talk for this week. But before we get out of here, we've got final shots featuring NBA trade deadline, which is tomorrow. And, well, one of the biggest trades in NBA history happened. So, Dustin, the Mavs fan here on the pod, just take us through Saturday night and your experience with the news that shook the sports world.
Yeah, I kind of still can't believe it because it's so outrageous. It's probably a good word for it. And ridiculous that you would have a 25-year-old, probably not even in his prime yet, like just getting into his prime, maybe.
Usually your prime's like 27, 28, you know.
And has drugged you to playoffs and Western Conference finals and even a finals last year. And you've moved and made free agent moves to build around this guy. And you traded him for almost nothing.
Yeah. Anthony Davis, hey.
Anthony Davis.
The NBA champion.
And
10-time All-Star.
Pretty much nothing. 1 pick back. Like, what the fuck is that?
Max Christie.
Sure. Whoever that guy is. Like, not going to matter anymore. But Cuban would have never let this happen. Like, he's even said he would have divorced his wife. Like, that's why it's so also shocking, is just the fact they got almost nothing back in return.
Yeah.
Like, you couldn't even get a bag of basketballs or something. Like, it's pretty much what you did. And my theory on it is Nico got told from above ownership because Cuban sold last year to this Vegas casino group that wants casino around the Dallas arena and gambling in Texas. And I think that ownership group made a business move and for business money and saw that Supermax coming in a year and a half and said, we ain't paying that, and get them out while you can before we let them walk. And that was pretty much the conversation and forced Nico to do it. Now, Nico messed it up by not getting shit back for him.
Yeah, only offering it to the Lakers. There's rumors like maybe they went to the Bucks for an offer too, but not putting an offer out there or just letting the NBA know that Luka's on the table is malpractice. Like, you've got to explore the market.
But, yeah, it was business people making a business move, which kind of doesn't make sense when, if you look at it, look how much money Luka is bringing you with attendance out the ass. You're selling so much merch.
He's the face of the Mavs and maybe the NBA. Like, he's the face of Dallas. Dallas fans, and y'all,
your international is so high because of that. Like, he's making you way more money than you would have had to pay in that Supermax, guys. That's what I don't understand.
That's already baked in. That's already baked in, that contract, because the TV rights deal starts next year. So you already got that money.
You're going to make way more than what you got to pay this guy $360 million over whatever years. Like, that was
that contract's not that bad. That contract's not that bad with what they're going to be making.
And also the other side of it, basketball-wise, that's the thing. Like, business people made business moves, not basketball moves here. And that's stupid. The other basketball thing, you just crunched your quote-unquote championship window into 2 years probably rather than a decade, 10 to 12 years.
Yeah.
That didn't make any fucking sense. And like, what?
What, you don't believe Anthony Davis is going to be able
to... And pouts a little bit? Bro, he can score 70.
Yeah. He averages like 35, 15, and 10.
He's already a five-time first-teamer. That's more than Curry has.
Stupid.
Think about that.
It was so shocking, like take it back to the night. Like, I'm just in bed watching tech highlights and seeing what everybody's saying, and then I see this tweet from Shams. I'm like, nah. Did somebody hack this dude for sure? Like, checking to spell out his name, make sure all the letters are right. Oh wait, that's actually Shams.
Yep.
And he tweets out, this is real. Then Mark Stein confirms it, and you're like, oh my god, they just traded Luka. This is baffling. I'm not a Mavs fan. I'm currently a Laker fan because of LeBron, so this ends up working out for me. But I just still can't understand it.
Nope.
The theory that I've heard that I think kind of makes the most sense to me now, and I heard it today on a podcast, is that the Mavs ownership
gambling.
They're trying to get legalized gambling into Texas. And by getting rid of Luka, they can either tank this franchise enough to where the threat of the Mavs moving to Las Vegas can push some people to get legalized gambling, that this is all a push to try to do that, which would make more, like, still doesn't make sense for operating a franchise. But if that's their motives, then I could kind of understand that a little bit from a business standpoint of trying to get, I know a lot of people want this to be legal in Texas, but it's still like just one of the dumbest all time trades that you'll ever see. And if you're Lakers and you're Rob Pelinka, you're just like, thank you so much for giving us the opportunity to get to reset our franchise, get a 25-year-old superstar who's going to be filling Staples Center or the Crypto Arena or whatever it's called nowadays for the next 10 plus years, because he's freaking awesome and he's an amazing basketball player. Like Ryan Russillo said, I don't care if Luka's dribbling the ball with cigarettes smoking a cigarette, I'm still going to sign that contract every fucking time. It's just absolutely baffling. I still can't believe it. And Luka's suiting up for the first time on Saturday.
I tweeted out and quote tweeted a Chase Serrano You want to hear basketball guys that you follow about people jumping off the Mavs and joining another bandwagon. And he was opening up the Spurs bandwagon. And I was like, I might have to join now that they got De'Aaron Fox to go with Wimby. Cause you know, they won't screw up Wimby. Spurs are actually a decent run organization.
It is interesting. Like, the only player in the NBA that you trade, and we were talking about this a little bit last night, the only player you trade in the NBA for Luka is Wimby. Like, that's the only other guy. Like, you look at Anthony Davis, 31. You think that's going to age well? Probably not. Giannis is already, you know, older. Like, Luka's 25. Like, you don't get that young superstar. Your organization is lucky to have that once. Like, some of these franchises have never even had an opportunity to have a Luka.
You kicked him out.
Gave him away.
Not even gave him away. You kicked him out.
Kicked him out.
That's ridiculous.
I, as a LeBron fan, cannot wait to see what kind of Luka we get, because I feel like he's going to go scorched earth.
I hope so.
I think we're all in disbelief. I think, like, looking at him in the press conference yesterday, I feel like he's in more disbelief than anybody.
He was, man.
And, like, I feel bad for him, because, you know, there's the reports that he had, like, just bought a house. He was planning to be a Mav for his entire career. He loved Dallas. He gave back to Dallas. He was, like, not from Dallas, but that's his second home. Yeah. And you just trade him, like, all-time fumble of the bag. It's either, like, you as a Mavs fan, I heard this brought up somewhere the other day. It was like, will winning a championship even make this feel okay? No. Or are you still,
No. No.
Yeah. That's kind of how I would feel. I'm like, okay, cool. We won a championship, but you have like a 1-2 year window to do it. And then after that, like, what's the plan? Just back into the despair There's of a no franchise one. Once. So, yeah, a lot of Mavs fans, no longer Mavs fans after this. I saw that they're refunding season tickets for Mavs fans who no longer want to be a part of it. So, could be a really interesting decision to see how it ultimately plays out for the Mavs and what ends up happening here. Because really bad move, really crazy. But the other big thing going on in the sports world, I haven't really talked too much about the Super Bowl this week because the Luka Doncic trade has just taken over the airwaves and all the podcasts. But the Super Bowl is Sunday. The Chiefs, yet again, in the Super Bowl. Patrick Mahomes is inevitable. We're just getting used to it. And it's the chance for a three-peat. Chiefs versus Eagles. The Chiefs, it feels like they just play the same teams every time they make the Super Bowl. Super Bowl predictions. What you got?
Yeah, I'm excited. I am scared of Saquon Barkley and how James Cook ran in the AFC Championship against that Chiefs defense. But so that worries me a little bit. But it's still Mahomes and the Chiefs and Chris Jones, like all that experience, like Andy Reid's bags. Like, I'm not going to bet against Mahomes. I'm going to take the Chiefs. And it's going to be close because that's all the Chiefs play, especially in these big games. I'm going to take them 31-30.
31-30, damn. All right. I don't know if I have a score prediction.
I just came up with that 30 minutes ago.
I don't have a score prediction, but I'm also going to take the Chiefs. I just can't bet against the GOAT, man. Can't bet against Mahomes. He just continually does it. This team continually does it. There's that fear that other teams have when Mahomes has the ball and it's the fourth quarter. You just kind of know he's going to get it done. Obviously, you know, want Mahomes to cement his legacy, and the Chiefs' legacy with a three-peat here would just be incredible to see what they have done. And this dynasty has been unreal to watch and been a lot of fun to watch football-wise, because there hasn't been a whole lot of Texas Tech fun stuff in football. So this has provided a lot of joy. So excited for Sunday, excited for this game and the chance for the Chiefs. I really hope the turf's much better than the last time these two teams faced, where everybody was like slipping everywhere on that turf. So I hope that's better. But I'm not super afraid of the Eagles offense other than Saquon. I think Hurts is not as good as he was just a couple years ago throwing the ball. But obviously Saquon has just kind of been on one of those just
monster,
unreal runs. Just an amazing dude. And yeah, he's going to be tough to stop, but if you can contain him, contain this offense a little bit, Chiefs might be holding up another Lombardi in the three-peat.
Yep.
But Sunday is right around the corner, which is also sad because football's over after that. But then we're on to college basketball and NBA. So that's everything we got for you guys this week. Hope you enjoyed it. Fun talking about Texas Tech basketball. Sucky trade, but still fun to talk about and wonder what exactly happened. I feel like it'll be years before we figure out exactly why this trade happened. But fun things happening in the sports world right now. So we hope you guys enjoy your weekend, staying up for that late nighter on Saturday against Arizona, and then, of course, enjoying your tailgates for Super Bowl Sunday. But as always, we will catch y'all at the next tailgate.